Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness, on life continuum, as revealed through near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Some of the topics included are what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our organization and the services that we offer, not the least of which is this radio broadcast, please visit our website, towarddelight.org, and towarddelight.info. Well, this week I'm very, very pleased to have the author of a powerful book entitled Raised from the Dead, a man who was in a head-on collision, a motor car accident that rendered him dead on arrival. Well, he's certainly not dead, and spirit brought him back. And this is going to be a very powerful show. We're going to be talking about not only this one NDE, but other experiences as well. Let us welcome to Toward the Light, Mr. Rick Madison. Hello and welcome.
Well, thank you for allowing me to come and share my story, Julia.
It's wonderful to have you with us. And I really have enjoyed reading your book, too, because more and more, you know, we are able to show just the power of love and how people are brought back to life, loads of us, as it turns out, and then also how you were gifted with the ability to also do healing work. That's something that you and I both have got in common. So why don't we start with you describing the experiences that you've been through. Now, I know, I think it was when you were a little lad, You were still an infant, or were you a toddler, actually, that you had a fall, and that rendered you in a coma for a few days?
Yes, I was 6 months old, and I had actually rolled off of the sofa and hit my head, and I was in a coma for 6 days and six nights. I don't remember anything from that age. I guess I was probably about 5 years of age before I actually remember anything back to that age, but I had some folks that prayed for me, and and I came back alive. The doctors told my family that there wasn't anything they could do medically to get me to wake up, and but I've been in two comas in my life. The last one, of course, was in 1986 from the head-on collision automobile accident.
And then you also had another experience, but actually this was more of a close call, right, with your deranged uncle, was it?
Yes. I was living with my grandparents. I was about 5 years of age, and he lost his mind. He just went berserk, and he decided he was going to come and shoot everybody in the whole household, and he shot at me and missed me. And I ran and jumped under one of the beds in the house, and he couldn't find me, but he chased my grandmother down, and he shot her five times, and then he went up the road and committed suicide. My grandmother was actually pronounced dead on arrival, but she ended up setting up hours later there at the hospital, and she still has or had two bullets that they couldn't remove because of his fretted paralyzer. He had a .22 rifle, and but that was a very close call. I'm just very fortunate that he didn't, because the bullet missed my head. If it hit me in the head, it'd been over with. But I've been in numerous car accidents, and one time when I was about 12 years of age, I was playing hang-go-seek in a washeteer in a laundromat. My cousin and I, and I got one of the big dryers to hide, and some folks came in, some young people, and they was clowning around, and they saw me in the dryer, and they closed the door and held it shut, and was trying to find the correct change to turn it on, and one of the guy's girlfriends fought him away, and I couldn't get the door open, and she came back and ran back in and opened the door and let me out. If he'd have turned the dryer on, I would have died that day for sure. And I've had a lot of close calls that I shouldn't be here, but of course the accident in 86, when I went to sleep at the wheel, went over the yellow line, hit another car head on. That was a very tragic accident. I had many broken bones and internal injuries and was pronounced dead on arrival and laid in a brain dead coma 27 days at that time.
Well, now that's interesting. You fell asleep at the wheel. I had somebody on the show, Joni Thurston, on the same thing happened to her. She was driving home on, and she was going 45 miles an hour, and she fell asleep with the wheel and just slammed into a light post, I believe it was. And she was completely, you know, her body was completely ripped apart as well. And the police report, they had put across the top, possible fatal. That was the title of her book. And, of course, she was a miracle person, too. And it's so clear. I mean, as I was reading your book, I thought, blimey, this lad is definitely divinely protected. And I was so moved by that. And
That's exactly how fast I was going, was 45 miles an hour.
Wow.
It just so happened the other person I hit was going 45 also. That's like running
head
90
on.
Head on into a brick wall.
Oh.
The other people I hit head on, it broke one of the driver, it broke her leg, and her brother riding with her, it broke his arm. And, of course, I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and it pushed my left leg through my pelvis. I broke my left hip, crushed my right foot, broke my ribs in my chest. One rib tore the aorta artery at my heart. Another rib punctured my right lung. My spleen was ruptured. C5 vertebrae was broken in my neck. My jaw was broken. And my right eye was knocked out. And I was in a mess.
Oh, God, love you. Yeah, and then you went through... Now, you were in the coma, you said, 20-odd days.
27 days, yes.
Okay. Wow.
They, you know, when I was eventually cut out of my vehicle, they carried me to Vanderbilt University Hospital, which is in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
Yeah, I wasn't far from there. I was near the airport there in Nashville when I was in the accident. And
okay.
The doctor
Donaldson.
Actually pronounced me dead on arrival when I was brought there.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Yeah, it was interesting reading about that because, funnily enough, when I used to live in Nashville, and my former singing partner was in a motor car accident. She ended up in Vanderbilt, and so I visited her there. And I was doing lots of praying and healing work for her, and they kicked her out of me after a couple of days because she had no insurance, and I thought that was absolutely inappropriate to do that. But oh well. And so it's really interesting to think about all of these close calls. And I admittedly wasn't very impressed with the, I should say, lack of care that I saw being administered to her. So I'm curious about the care that you received, but again, it would seem like really more divine intervention.
Well, that's true. I had three prayer warriors in my family.
Now, define what a prayer warrior is, if you don't mind, you know, defining what a prayer warrior is.
Okay. Well, the three that's in my family, they refused to give up.
Okay.
Every time the medical professions, the trauma physician and other doctors told them to make funeral arrangements, they went to the prayer room and continued to pray. They wouldn't stop until a good report came. And I was there a total of 49 days, but there was three occasions that they were advised to make funeral arrangements. And, of course, they kept interceding and praying, and they wouldn't give up. And my mother happened to be one of those. My aunt and my uncle were the other two. And, you know, the doctors... they gave me 124 units of blood. I got hepatitis, yellow jaundice, blood poison, double pneumonia. They waited 25 days to repair the broken bones in my body. I got all the infections. They had 400 staples held me together from 9 surgeries. They placed a brace around my neck where C5 vertebrae was broken. And those prayer warriors started praying for my neck to no longer be broken. And there's an x-rays in the book also. They're raised from the dead. It's got the pictures of the broken neck, broken jaw, broken hip, broken foot. And but after 3 days of interceding and praying, my neck wasn't broken anymore. They had 3 x-rays showing it broken, and now they got 3 more showing it not broken. And the trauma physician said he couldn't explain that. Of course, other things occurred. Every time they were given a report, they knew what to pray for. And they just go in and pray and not give up until an answer came.
Oh, that's exquisite. And indeed, talk about the power of prayer. Speaking of prayer, I like to tell people about my friend Claude Swanson, who's a physicist who's been on my show a couple of times. And he developed a website called globalpeaceprayer.com. And in this website, and also in his book, Synchronized Universe, he is actually proving the power of prayer. And I love it. I think it is so powerful, the way that people can really know, you know, it's not just hearsay, that it really is true, that when people pray, it doesn't matter if it's just one or two people or a whole planet full of people praying, it really does make a tremendous difference, and literally between life and death in a number of cases, and you're a wonderful example of that.
Right.
And certainly I am too, to be honest, and that's wonderful. So that really inspired me to see this, because it does work even when, you know, things do seem utterly hopeless. So what did some of these physicians do? I know a number of them must have gained some tremendous faith after sort of shaking their heads and going, goodness me, I'm sure they were gobsmacked, number one, but then started realizing there's something special going on here.
Oh yes, they were. The trauma physician told me later, after I had an out-of-body experience and I sat up out of this 27-day brain dead coma, he told me himself, he said, I pronounced you dead on arrival. He said, I don't understand why you're awake. I don't understand how you have a sound mind. He told my family I was a vegetable. I didn't have any activity on the lower lobes of my brain.
Yeah.
They removed the spleen, sewed up my aorta artery. It tore back loose. I had to go in and sew it up again. And told my family that my liver and kidneys had stopped functioning. They'd given me large quantities of blood to other infections. They couldn't kill the strains of infections, put me in beds of ice. Had 105-degree fevers on many days. They kept telling my family that there's nothing else they could do. They had to make funeral arrangements. And the third time they brought a social worker, and the social worker was to help them make funeral arrangements. But those three believers that really believed in prayer and that God would answer, they didn't quit. And they said, well, we know what to pray for. We're going back and interceding. They went to the prayer room. They stayed for hours. 10 hours that last time before they ever came out. And they got a word that the doctor said that I had was improving, that the neck wasn't broken anymore. And then the third time is when after having an out-of-body experience, I woke out of this brain-dead coma, and I wrote on paper to the nurses what the prayer room was like, because I had just came from there. But the doctors were amazed, and the main trauma physician told me, he said, there must be a God in heaven, and he's watching over you, because, you know, the infections have disappeared. Your neck's no longer broken. You're not a vegetable anymore. And I can't explain any of that. There's a higher power that has taken over.
That's so beautiful. And I was going to ask you, too, if your beloved relatives were keeping a round-the-clock vigil in the prayer room, or how that was working. Because I know that sort of thing has been done before, and it really does work.
That's correct. They had many other friends praying. Many of them were calling different prayer helplines, different television shows, radio shows, and having everyone to call out my name and pray. And of course, I wasn't a prayer warrior. When I was in this accident, I didn't pray. I didn't serve God. I was in a world of partying, the drugs, the alcohol, the cocaine. You know, I had my own air conditioning, heating, refrigeration business in Nashville. But in the back of my mind, I thought, well, when I get 70, 80, or 90 years of age, I'll settle down and I'll do right and I'll, you know, pray and go to church and all that. But I didn't realize we're not promised tomorrow. And when I set up out of this coma, I knew it was my time to walk a straight and narrow path, and that I had to begin to pray for myself. You know, others had prayed for me, and now it's time for me to pray for me and pray for others also.
This is a really good example of how something, I mean, on the surface, you know, blimey, it's very tragic, and yet it ended up being a tremendous gift for you, and not only for you, but for people all over the place.
Oh, that's correct. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. I had, after I came out of the hospital, 49 days later, I was told I may never walk again. I had a steel plate, 9 screws and 2 pins placed in my left hip, and they accidentally severed the sciatic nerve in two. They placed a steel plate, 9 screws in my right foot, took 3 bones out of it. They placed a steel plate and 2 screws in my jaw. And they told my family that I may never walk again because they'd waited 25 days to repair the broken bones, and that both sides of my lower extremities had been severely broken for so long, and that accidentally severed a sciatic nerve in my left leg. The reason I had no feeling in it, and that I might walk maybe in a year, and I'd have to have some type of walking apparatus. But during prayer, 8 weeks later, I heard an audible voice that told me to stand up and walk, and I stood up and walked out of a wheelchair 8 weeks later. Been 10 weeks since they rebroke my bones and repaired them. But, you know, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, and I go around sharing this story, you know, telling people that how that God can take something tragic and he can turn it into something positive.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And in fact, I've got that attitude about everything that happens, because everything does happen for a reason, and I've got the utter conviction that still, no matter what is going on, that it's all for a reason, and that it ultimately is serving the light. It is serving love. It is going to turn everything round into, you know, as I always say, and I quite mean this, that only love prevails and only love will prevail. And so sometimes we have to deal with these boulders in order to really help make us aware of what is real and what is truly important. Here's a good example of that.
Well, that's correct, and it changed my life for the better. You know, I can pull up my shirt and I can show people scars from 400
yeah.
staples that held me together from 9 surgeries, and I don't call them scars; I call them stars.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And because all things work for good to them that love God. And he loved me before I ever knew about loving him. But his mercy, yeah. And because of prayer warriors in my family, and people have asked me, well, why do you think you were given a second or third chance or all these times you could have left Earth? And I basically tell them because, you know, I had a mission to do. I had a work to do. But because of people interceding, praying for me, you know, I was given an opportunity to do right and to help other people, and that's my mission now. You know, one of the reasons I wrote the book, Raised from the Dead, was to help other people learn how to receive from God. I didn't know how to receive. I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know how to use faith, and I didn't even know I had faith. I started out just writing a manual just to help some of my other family members and friends. And on our website now, we also have rickmadison.org. We have a reenactment of my story with actors out of California that actually reenacted my story, my out-of-body experience, walking out of the wheelchair. I don't know if you had a chance to
I
go.
I saw that. I did see then. It. Yes. Now, it's rickmadison.org or .com, or is it both?
It's both.
Uh-huh. Okay, rickmadison.org and rickmadison.com. Yes, I did see that video, and I thought, oh, that's quite striking, and I could see you stopping.
Yeah, they did a fantastic job. Even the guy that's playing me walking out of the wheelchair, he sort of looked like me, with the mustache and all, and But they did a fantastic job.
That's great. Now, what I wanted to do, too, is, number one, to acknowledge what you were saying, learning how to receive from God, or just to receive, period. That's such a good point, because so many of us, and I think especially those of us who tend to be givers by nature, don't really know how to receive very well. We want to give all the time, but when it comes to receiving, it's, how do we do this?
Right.
And so, you know, you're setting a really good example there of indeed how to just let go and receive and feel very good about it, because also by receiving, we are giving. And that's a very important point, and I'm so pleased that you brought that up. Also, Rick, I wanted to ask you to describe a bit your out-of-body experience whilst your body was dead. Tell us a bit about your sojourn on the other side.
Well, I didn't know anything from the time of the accident. The paramedics, they said I fought with them some, but I don't remember that. And then they put 3 liters of systoloid solution in my veins, because with a ruptured spleen and a torn aorta artery, you'll bleed out. And that's what I did. I bled out. And
yeah,
when I was pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital, the trauma physician said, he told my family he was sending me to the morgue, but he said he felt like something spoke to him and told him to bring me back and do what he knew to do. Even though he didn't acknowledge God at that time, I found out that about a year ago that this trauma physician has accepted God and believes in him now. I guess he saw so many miracles he had to. But
that's great.
I didn't remember anything until I woke up. But when I woke up, I remembered having this out-of-body experience, but I didn't know at the time I was having an out-of-body experience. The only thing I can tell you is that I left my body, and I walked down a hallway, and I saw doctors and nurses. I assumed I was at a hospital, but I didn't know which one. And when I got close enough to the doctors and nurses, rather than stepping over and getting out of the way, I just walked right through them. And I thought, well, that's odd. They didn't even know I was, they didn't even move out of my way. But they didn't acknowledge me. They didn't know I was there. And I walked a little further down the hallway, but I didn't really see my feet touching the floor. It was sort of like I was floating, but yet I can't say I was floating, but I don't remember my feet. I couldn't say that I felt the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I walked a little further, I went into a small room. I just went right in through a doorway there, and it happened to be a prayer room at the hospital. It was a chapel. And I walked up to the front, and I saw my mother on her knees, and she had her hands up in the air, and she was praying. And I saw my dad, I saw several friends of mine, I saw several other relatives, and I was looking around, and they were all praying, and they were all praying for me. And I thought, well, why are they praying for me? Here I am. And I sat down and listened to my mother, and my mother said, Father, in the name of Jesus, don't let Rick die, raise him up. And I said, Mom, here I am, right here, can't you see me? And she looked in my direction, but she couldn't see me. And I knew it instantly that I had to do what she was doing. It was just like it was downloaded into my brain. You do what she's doing. You say what she's saying. So that's what I began to do. I looked up, and I said, well, Jesus, if you're real, come on, see and help me. Something's wrong. My mama's praying for me, and she can't even see me. And immediately I felt a hand come down, and I felt a literal touch on the top of my head. And the hand was so big, it was like I could see the fingers sticking over the front of my forehead down toward my face. And I felt this hand cover my head, and I heard a voice. And this voice said, I'm Jesus, I am real, and I'm going to raise you up and give you another chance. And
wow,
you go tell everyone that I still perform miracles and that I'm coming again. And immediately, as I tried to push against that hand, I tried to turn and see who this was. And the hand wouldn't let my head turn. And immediately, as pushing against that hand, I left that prayer room, and just quick as lightning, I was in my body, and I sat up out of this 27-day brain-dead coma. And I reached for the nurse at the foot of my bed because I wanted to tell her about this experience. And she turned around and saw me reaching for her, and she jumped about 5 feet. And the reason being is because right before I set up, I was swelled as big as a barrel. My head was large as a basketball. I had 17 drain tubes coming out of my chest. An 18th tube was a feeding tube. They fed me 3,000 calories of baby food per day through a feeding tube. I had all these staples holding me together from 9 surgeries. I was swelled up big as a barrel, stinking. My dad said that he had to hold his nose when he came in and saw me the last time because I turned yellow from the yellow jaundice and the hepatitis and blood poison, double pneumonia. They couldn't rotate me because of the broke vertebrae in my neck, which ended up not being broke anymore. And, you know, the poison was, they was giving me every antibiotic they had available, but they couldn't kill the strains of infection. Then my liver and kidneys stopped working, and that made it even worse. But when I reached up to touch her, all that was gone. Immediately, infection had left my body, swelling had left my body, and I was no longer a vegetable. I had a sound mind. And she saw that I was trying to say something, and she turned her paper over and said, "What are you trying to say?" And I scribbled down, "Is there a church here?" Because that's what I just remembered coming from. I didn't know it was the prayer room. And she said, "Well, you're at Vanderbilt Hospital. You've been in an automobile accident." And I wrote down, "It's got red carpet. And my mom and dad's there praying for me." And she read it. She said, "Well, your mom and dad's usually out in a waiting room. And there's a prayer room on the first floor, but I don't know what it looks like." Well, I scribbled down, "I know what it looks like. I just came from there." Well, that really shook her up. And she motioned for another nurse to take my vital signs, and she went down and got my mother. My mother told me later while they were praying that the social worker was there trying to get them to sign the papers to take me off the life support. And she said a nurse walked in and said, "I don't mean to interrupt anyone, but is there anyone here that has a relative by the name of Richard Madison?" And my mother said, "That's my son, and we're here praying, and we're not giving up. We're not signing any papers." And my mother told me, the nurse said, "Well, you must be praying to the real God because your son's setting up, and he says he just came from here." And 12 doctors came into my room and lined up from one end of my bed to the other, all in the room. And they were asking me questions, and I was communicating on paper, which I did for 2 weeks before they took the tracheotomy out of my throat. And they asked me questions, and I answered them writing down on paper, and they were just amazed. They couldn't believe that they had gone from one moment of bringing a social worker in trying to get my family to sign the papers to the next morning, next moment I was sitting up answering questions from them.
You know, something that's really interesting, too, how the course has happened to me during my near-death episodes is that you go out of body like that, and you're having these experiences, at least with me, and it sounds like the same was true with you. It's, everything just felt and seemed so natural to you.
It did, and there was no... one thing I do remember is that the temperature was perfect. There was, you know, I wasn't hot, I wasn't sweating, I wasn't cold. It was just the perfect temperature. I just felt so at ease. There was no pain. I was just moving right down the hallway, and just went right through this doctor and a couple of nurses, and they didn't even know I was there, but I could see everything in detail, even the color of the carpet when I went into the prayer room. I saw everyone in detail. In fact, later I told them who was in there praying.
Yes, and that's excellent, and it's this sort of thing that's really adding a lot of proof and credibility to the fact that the people's consciousness is actually outside the physical brain. The brain is just like a radio receiver that receives the consciousness, the information, but it's not the broadcaster. And so, you know, in my way of thinking, it's totally natural that people are going to be conscious and thinking and experiencing things when they are not in the physical body, when the physical body is completely flatlined, clinically dead, and what have you. And so here again is more proof of that fact and how you were able to describe things absolutely perfectly. Now, I'm sure it must have been a shock then when you re-entered your body and you were just absolutely deluged with pain. Am I correct about that?
Oh, yes, definitely. They In fact, the doctors tried to say I had a lot of willpower. They were telling me that you have a lot of willpower. You have a lot of stamina. You have a strong will to survive and live. And I wrote down Jesus on a piece of paper and shook it at him. And one doctor spelled it and said, look, he's wrote down something, and he spelled it. And another doctor said, well, it's got to be Jesus. He's alive. We gave up on him.
Aww.
And they were just amazed. In fact, my trauma physician brought two of his friends in from California that he went to school with, and they're medical doctors out in California. He introduced them to me, and he said, these are two of my friends. I paid for them to fly out here just to look at your charts. Because they didn't believe what I was telling them.
Wow.
And they stood there and looked over my charts just shaking their heads. They couldn't explain it.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, getting back to the notion of willpower. I really feel like we do work in concert with Source, with God. And that, you know, there was an agreement between you and the Creator. You know, even before you took on physical form, that you would be going through these experiences and setting an example of how divine love really and truly works. And this is powerful that you've come through all of this. And I admit that I empathize in so many ways because I was also laid up with a spinal injury for a year and a half. When you're hurt when you're ill and what have you, and people are naysayers, in other words, say, oh, you'll never walk again, or you'll never be able to live without life support system, or what have you, and then we just defy all of that and prove them wrong every time. And you certainly did that too. And then you had another experience. Well, actually, it was with your kidneys failing again. That was after this, correct? And then you
had that's correct. And the accident was in 1986.
And how old were you then?
I was 24 years of age, and I woke up on my 25th birthday.
Wow.
It happened on May the 13th, and I woke up on May the 10th, and I walked out of a wheelchair there the 1st of August of 86. And I started going around and telling my story to people here in Alabama and Tennessee. And, of course, I've been out of the country 33 times now, 10 different nations sharing this story. But in 1992, my kidneys stopped working. A combination of several things, probably not drinking enough water, eating too much salt, and not eating the right foods, eating a lot of fast foods, and just not really taking care of myself. And plus, they believe that it could have been the dye that they put in my body, in my blood, when I was admitted to the hospital. They run the dye to find out where I was bleeding internally, and I was bleeding through the spleen. The spleen was ruptured. I had a torn aorta artery. Well, they removed the spleen, set up the aorta artery, and then a few days later, the aorta artery tore back loose, so they had to run the dye back in my body again. And I had a huge abscess on my left side where it was dripping down. They had to open me up to remove the infection, and they said that putting that dye, that amount of dye in my body twice, with just in a few days, was really hard on my kidneys.
Oh,
but then I had all the blood poisoning and the infections raging, too, that my kidneys and liver was trying to get rid of. And, they said it's probably a combination of several things. Because I told them I didn't drink much water, which, we all should drink a whole lot more water.
Yes,
and
that's a good point.
I probably ate too much salt and a combination of several things. But I did receive, I was on dialysis, emergency dialysis for 9 weeks. And, I ended up receiving a kidney transplant, and I've never had any rejection from the kidney transplant. It's just like I'm back to normal, except, I don't eat hardly any salt now, and I drink more water and to take care of myself better. And, that was a valuable lesson for me to learn. But the good thing is I'm not on dialysis anymore.
Oh, absolutely. Now, are you, you're just living with one operating kidney then, correct?
That's correct. They left my two kidneys in. They won't remove them unless they're cancerous or have tumors. So I actually have three kidneys in me, but only one of them's working. But they say that, you know, two kidneys, each one will work at 50% each. If you have one, it'll work at 80%. And, you know, it's just miraculous how that when I was on dialysis, I saw more people delivered from kidney trouble praying for them while I was on dialysis than any other time of my life. And I kept saying, I don't understand what's going on here.
Wow.
And one young man I prayed for, he'd been shot in the back during a robbery. He worked at a convenience store, and they came in and robbed it. He ran out the back door, and they shot him in the back. But he was on dialysis, and I prayed for him, for him to get kidneys or for his to start working. He'd been on dialysis for 7 years. He told me, I'm dying, so I don't get a kidney quick. I'm not going to be here much longer. And I prayed for him, and he never told me he was shot or had back pain. But while I was praying for him, it just come up in my spirit, pray for his back. And I started praying for his back. Well, 2 weeks later, he called me, and he said, you know, I'm at the hospital. I've gotten a kidney, and I just wanted to call you and let you know. Thanks for praying for me. And he said, oh, by the way, when you prayed for my back, you didn't know it, but I've been shot in the back. And they wouldn't remove the bullet because it was too close to my spine. They was afraid it'd paralyze me. He said, but when I did some more testing and they put the kidney in me, they found that the bullet was no longer in my back. The bullet was gone. And he said, you didn't know it while my back was hurting, but he said, I know I'll never have no more back pain. And I said, well, isn't that odd that a bullet would disappear and you still had to have a kidney?
Yeah.
But God does work in mysterious ways.
Now, your aunt, is that correct? Your aunt, your grandmother, right, who was shot four times. But
yes,
she also recovered, right, and she had a near-death experience.
Oh, yes. She went to the, she left her body and went to the grave site where she was going to be buried. And
right.
at the time, they didn't even own any burial plots. And she went, and God had her by the hand and said, now, one day, this is where you'll be, your body will be buried, but it's not time yet, and I'm not going to let you leave Earth yet. There's still much more for you to do. And they had done pulled a sheet up over her, and she took a deep breath, and the family that was there in the room, they was making arrangements for her funeral, and they heard her breathe and saw her move, and they pulled a sheet down, and she had her eyes open.
Wow.
And that was in 1966 when that happened, and she went on to be with the Lord about 2 years ago.
Wow.
Which would have been, I think, 2006.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so interesting because, of course, at that time, there was just nothing. I mean, no one... Raymond Moody had not even coined the word near-death experience, even though I deem that as a bit inaccurate. It's more like a death experience rather than near-death.
Right, and not only that, the hospital that she went to was just a little old, I think, a 25-bed health care center that was the closest thing they could get her to. And, you know, just to be... To come out of there is a miracle within itself. They meant good. They just didn't have any equipment. They didn't have anything like we have today at that time, especially in that little hospital. It was good if you needed stitches or if you needed casts on a broken bone, but not for multiple traumas and being shot.
Well, exactly. And another interesting point with this too is that In my case, when I had died of the colon cancer, and of course I was in a coma also for several weeks, then lost my vital signs on my birthday. And then I came out of the coma, I think, a week after my birthday. And, you know, what was so interesting is that people would say, well, how did you recover from the cancer? And I said, well, it's called divine intervention, or what is commonly referred to as a spontaneous recovery, because it had nothing to do with what any physicians or medical personnel did. It was just through that same divine intervention. And so these are wonderful examples of that occurring, especially when the technology or the personnel are not available to revive an individual or to enable an individual to recover from whatever it is. So,
well, you know, when I came out of the hospital, I had a $200,000 hospital bill, no insurance. I was being sued for $2 million by the other people that I hit head on. And I was praying because I was in a lot of trouble. People had to bathe me. They had to put a bedpan under me, and I lost my air-conditioned business. I lost everything that I owned. But it put me on a path to start seeking God. And he told me, he said, you can lose everything you got, but as long as you got me, you got enough to start all over again.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I need you to make me well so I can go back in my air-conditioned business so I can pay the hospital bill, and I got to do something about this lawsuit. And he said, if you just go around and tell people about me, I'll take care of all that. And so I picked up the phone and started calling people long distance, telling them about my story. And from that day, I never got another doctor bill. I never got a letter from a collection agency. And 5 years later, of course, I never called them and asked them why either. But 5 years later, a little film crew came and reenacted my story and from the 700 Club, and they reviewed the medical records, and they also wanted to interview the trauma physician, so I had to go to Vanderbilt Hospital, and when I went there, I found out that they had zero on the hospital and doctor bill. I'd gotten a letter just a little bit after that stating that the people suing me for $2 million decided to drop the lawsuit. And I had had an angel to walk in my room that had gold hair to the floor, and it walked over and touched me. And that was the night that, you know, God said to me, he said, if you will tell people about me, I'll take care of the hospital and Dr. Bill, and I'll take care of you. And from that night, I never got another Dr. Bill, never got a letter from a collection agency, and it was just wiped away, so... You know, freely we receive, freely we give. So I started going around praying for people. And since that time, I've prayed for 18 people that have come. Well, I prayed for probably 50 people in comas. 18 have awakened, and 8 of those were brain dead.
I wanted to ask you about that, too. When you were catapulted, as it were, into your own wonderful healing work through the prayer and laying on of hands, and of course I do the same thing as well. And most of my work, however, is done remotely because I've got clients all over the world, and it really, really does work. So tell us a bit about some of the experiences. And of course you've already described with this dear lad with the dialysis and having been shot, and then these people who are in comas, were these people, when did you start all this? When did all of this start flowing? Was it right after you recovered from your own accident?
Yes, in 1986, after I walked out of a wheelchair, I started getting in the Word of God. I started praying, and I started looking for somebody to pray for. If they were sick, or if they were hurting, or if they were depressed, I said, well, let me pray with you. You know, perhaps, you know, God will do something supernatural for you. And somebody would say, well, I've got a relative in the hospital. Would you go pray for them? And I said, sure. And the first 3 people that were in comas that I actually saw awake, out of these 18 people that have awakened, I've only seen actually 3 of them personally awake immediately. The others have been within between 3 or 4 days up to... 21 days. I recently got a phone call from Canada from a doctor up there that called me to tell me about a patient that we had prayed for, that and this doctor in Canada was a believer. They said that the patient had just awakened, and they'd been in a coma 4 months, but most of them awoke out of comas within 21 days. But the first 3 people I ever saw awake immediately, the only 3 I ever saw awake immediately, was in 1986, and I was at a hospital, walked into a neuro intensive care, and I prayed for 2 people immediately, and the 3rd person, the relative, this young boy was in a wreck, and they told his mother to make funeral arrangements, and she was standing there spending the last few minutes, and she asked me to come over and pray for her son. And she said, I know God's no respecter of persons, and if he'll bring those 2 people right there up out of comas, he'll bring my son up out of a coma. And I'd looked at back at those people, and they had their eyes open, but I didn't know they'd been in comas. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, the first person you prayed for there, they haven't opened their eyes in 23 days. And the second person hadn't opened their eyes in 12 days. And I just reached down and prayed for her son, and he opened his eyes immediately. And they were telling her to make funeral arrangements right then.
Wow.
And several people that were in automobile accidents. One guy had been, and by the way, these stories, these testimonies, the people's names and addresses are in the back of my book, they're Raised from the Dead, because I included some of these stories in there. But one person had been shot between the eyes with a .25 caliber pistol, and he was at his mother's home. She took care of him, and a home health nurse would come several times a week, and she didn't want to put him in a nursing home. He was considered brain dead. The bullet hit his skull, broke up into fragments, went through his brain. The doctor said the bullet just made his brains like scrambled eggs. It just messed all of his brains up. And that he'd never move, speak, talk, or anything. He was a vegetable. And I prayed for him, went to their home, prayed for him. And within, I think it was a week and a half, I received a phone call from the mother. She's hysterical. I don't even know who she is. And finally she calms down to tell me that she's Greg's mother, and he just woke up out of this brain-dead coma. She calls me a week and a half later. He's off of all the equipment. He's able to speak. He's able to move. And another person I prayed for that was in a coma, he'd been in a hospital 117 days at the time I went and prayed for him. And I literally, standing there praying for him, I saw him raise his hand straight up in there, and he had burst open from the surgeries, and they couldn't sew him back up, and his intestines were sticking out. He was laying there. He had had a guardrail. He had a guardrail on a bridge, and it went up into his body, and it lacerated his spleen, his liver, his kidneys. It cut his right leg off. He was swelled so much it burst his eardrums. He had many code blues, dialysis, colostomies. And when I was praying for him right then, his family was making funeral arrangements for him at that moment. None of them were believers. And I drove 60 miles to go pray for him. I heard about him and convinced him to let me pray just, 30 seconds, and I'd leave him alone. And so the mother took me in, and while I'm praying for him, he raises his hand straight up in the air. And his mother, she can't believe it. She gets hysterical. The nurse runs in. And I told the mother, I said, don't bury him. I said, God's going to raise him up. 25 days later, he came out of the hospital, and everybody in the family accepted the Lord in their life. And she called me and told me. She said, my son, whom we were about to bury, is now home with us. And they gave him a prosthesis. But he can get around on one leg better than I can, too. And it's just he's just a walking miracle.
You know, it's so interesting how, throughout medical history, doctors have always claimed, once someone's in coma, once there's damage to the brain, and that person's just not going to be right after that ever again, and talking about brain dead and all of this hoo-ha. But then so many of us not only have defied that, but also have come back with IQs off the charts, literally. My friend PMH Atwater, who's a fellow near-death experiencer and researcher for over 30 years, she has documented all of this stuff. So, this has become even commonplace now, where so many people will come out of comas, and I don't remember what they're called, fourth stage comas or what have you. In other words, the irreversible comas that I've also been in.
Right.
We come out in better shape than when we went in.
Well, I know I've got a better mind now than I've ever had.
Me too.
And there's a scripture that tells us that God gives us a spirit of love, a spirit of power, and a sound mind.
Yes.
And I receive that.
True.
And, if the people get a copy of my book, Raised from the Dead, I believe it will instruct them on how to have the peace of God, how to have a sound mind, and also how to minister and pray for other people. And most of the people that, and we've sold, just literally thousands and thousands of this book, And they can get them from any bookstore or Amazon.com. They can get them from our website, rickmadison.org. But I promise you that it will be a book that will help you be able to minister to others and help others, or maybe put it in the hands of somebody that's sick or hurting, and they can have, you know, an encounter with God themselves that will change their life. I don't know if the people that's been delivered from cancer, I can't even count them all. My mother had malignant breast cancer. She had a knot on her breast the size of an egg, and they went in and did a biopsy and came back and said it's malignant. And they were going to remove both breasts just to be safe. And my mother called me, and she said, "Son," she said, "I don't want to have this done. I just want to trust God. Either I'm going to heaven or he's going to heal me, and I'm going to stay here a while." And I said, "Well, Mom, I'd rather keep you." I said, "You know, you to go on would be better for you, but, you know, I'd miss you, and I won't keep you around a while." And so I prayed with her and agreed with her, and she called the doctor and canceled the surgery. And he got mad at her and said, "Don't you know you're going to die?" And she said, "I'm not dying until God gets ready for me." And in 30 days, within 30 days, that knot completely disappeared. She went to a chiropractor to get an alignment, and he had a friend that was an oncology cancer specialist, and he sent her there just as a favor. It didn't cost her anything. And this other doctor examined her and did some tests and blood work. He came back and said he couldn't find where she ever had cancer.
That's excellent. Wow. Now, do you have a form on your website? I know the Unity Church, for example, does this, where they've got a page you can go to request prayers. Do you have something like that on your site? I was looking through it, but I didn't honestly see that, where you know, you've got something where people can just write to you and request prayers.
I didn't quite hear you. Are you asking me if do we have a prayer on the website?
Well, yeah, if you've got a place on your website where people can go to that place, you know, send you an email, put in a prayer request.
Oh, yes, there's a contact button on there. They can send us, when we did the reenactment back in January of this year of 08, on 10 different television networks, we had 37,000 hits on our website just in a matter of a few weeks. And my wife and I literally spent 2 weeks for just, you know, answering emails. We'll answer them. We'll pray with you and correspond with you. And I pray with people over the telephone. And, you know, I love helping people. I love people. You know, some people, they seem like they get so big you can't touch them. They're untouchable. But I'm a people person. And I want to help people any way I can. And I do speak about 200 days a year. But I want to also make available for if someone wants me to pray with them, I'd be glad to. And rick@rickmadison.com is our email address, and they can go right to it from our website, rickmadison.com or rickmadison.org, either one. And we're also, right now, we're offering a little package deal for those that want to get a copy of the book from our website. We'll send them this DVD with the reenactment with the actors of the out-of-body experience, walking out of the wheelchair, even before my uncle lost his mind, come trying to shoot us all, and it's really an amazing DVD. It's got 3 other programs on there. It's got an interview with me with Marcus and Joni Lamb from Daystar. It's got what we did from our own television studio here in Alabama. It's got a program called The Anointing and ones on funny things that has happened to me in ministry. And we're hoping to embark on the CTN channel, which is on Dish and Direct, be out in California somewhere on Monday nights, maybe around 9:30 here in in the next 60 days. That's our goal. And I'm supposed to talk with them tomorrow, but yeah, they can contact us from our website, any way we can help, but we'll be glad to.
Well, that's excellent, and again, your website is rickmadison.org or rickmadison.com, and your email is rick@rickmadison.com.
Correct.
So that's great, because I think it's really important that, you know, whatever people choose to call it or what have you, the power of prayer is tremendous, and it's been proven even by the scientific community that it really works, and goodness me, is it ever obvious that it works. You're a beautiful, glowing example of that, and I think it's splendid. All that you've been doing and the wonderful impact that you've had with your prayer and healing work and the wonderful experiences that you've had, and I'm sure that your family is absolutely delighted about all of this too. And then soon this show will be archived, and your page on my website is toddelight.org/rickmadison.html. And of course, when this show is archived, then people can come to your profile page on Toward the Light and listen to this show. It's really wonderful. Now, do you have any engagements coming up? We've just got a minute left. Have you got any engagements, anything coming up that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I'll be in Canada the next weekend, and then the next weekend I believe I'll be in Tennessee. I just got back from West Virginia yesterday, so I'm kind of spread out. We do have an itinerary on our website,
okay. And
where we're going to be and things like that, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity that you've given me to share a part of my story, and may the Lord bless all that you do and all the testimonies that are allowed to be shared, and hopefully, we can lift up somebody's spirits, hopefully we can encourage somebody. And, let them know that they are loved and they're important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've got a friend, if you've ever seen the beautiful film called Life After Life, based on Dr. Raymond Moody's book, the same title, produced by my friend Peter Schocke, who's in Nashville, actually Thompson Station, south of Nashville. And his wife, who's a wonderful friend also, she's a songwriter and singer, and she does a lot of work with writing. She's co-authored a couple of books with Peter. Well, she was recently diagnosed with colon cancer, just like what I had. But she said that she's not going to do the conventional treatments, and a lot of that was as per my encouragement. And she's living on natural modalities and prayer. So if you don't mind also including Stowe Shockey in your prayers.
Sure.
That would be lovely. And they're very wonderful believers, too, in this love and the power of divine intervention. So they're wonderful, wonderful people, and they're right there in Nashville, too. So, Rick, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. This has been absolutely splendid, and I'm so pleased to talk with you and to share all of this.
Well, it's been my honor, and thank you again so much.
Oh, you're welcome. And
if I can ever do anything for you, let me know.
I'll definitely do that. I think I'm going to shoot you an email about with a prayer request also.
Sure. Yeah, send them. We'll get some more folks praying.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, you're wonderful, and thank you so much for being on Toward the Light. We've been speaking.
Well, thank you so much, and you have a great week.
And you too, love. God bless you.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
We've been speaking to Rick Madison, the author. He's the author of the tremendous book, Raised from the Dead. Very, very powerful testimonies and information written therein. Again, you can visit his website, rickmadison.org or rickmadison.com. Next week, we are going to have a very, very powerful show. You must tune in for this one. We are going to have a special panel featuring David Icke, Kathy O'Brien, Mark Phillips, and Alfred Weber talking about HAARP and the severe damage that is inflicting on not only our planet, but in space and also on individuals. So 12th October. Next week, you're definitely going to want to tune into that show. It's going to be a special two-hour broadcast. So please join us for that show next week. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week for another transmission of Toward the Light. Blessings and light to all of you. We'll speak to you next week.